The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Hello again, it's Pat Kenny here. We're currently working away behind the scenes in preparation for my new weekend show, which will be coming your way in March. Every Saturday and Sunday at 10 a.m, I'll be covering everything from the latest in current affairs to the best in culture and lots, lots more. And the good news is, to keep you up to date on all we have to offer, you don't have to do a thing. Just make sure you keep following this feed on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. Between now and then, however, I've been looking back at some of the most thought-provoking and engaging guests to grace our studio over the past 12 years. The Central Intelligence Agency is a much chronicled agency, written about both in reality and in fiction, but rarely do we get a look behind the curtain of its real-world counterpart to see how accurately the agency we see on our screens or between the pages of a book is in real life. But now, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Tim Wenner has covered the CIA around the world for many, many years, including for the New York Times, and he's chronicled the inner workings of the agency in a new book which is called The Mission, and he joins us now. Tim, good morning and welcome.
How are you?
The subtitle of your book is The CIA and the 21st Century, but we will go back to the beginnings of the agency. But first of all, I want to ask you about your Irish connections, because you have a very eminent one.
Indeed. I've been married since the late 20th century to a marvelous woman named Kate Doyle. She's a human rights warrior. And her great uncle is the great Irish patriot, Robert Emmett.
My goodness. So is this part of your regular over-the-dinner chats about Irish history? And
There's a lot of Emmettry going around in my extended family, yeah.
Okay. Now let's move on to the topic of your new book, subtitled The CIA and the 21st Century. Remind us of why the CIA was set up.
CIA was created in 1947, not to fight the Cold War, that came later, but to prevent the next Pearl Harbor. The Japanese attack at Pearl Harbor succeeded in part because there were little pearls of intelligence scattered all over, some in the Army, some in the Navy, in the State Department, but no one had strung the pearls together, connected the dots, if you will. That was the first mission of the Central Intelligence Agency. And of course, on 9/11, it failed in that mission. The second Pearl Harbor happened.
Now, it evolved in its activities from that early mission it was given. As the Russians began to, the Soviet Empire really expanded right across Eastern Europe, and it was perceived as a major threat.
Yeah, no one really knew how far west Stalin wanted to go. He'd taken a lot of Eastern Europe. And was he aiming at Italy? Was he aiming at France? So the CIA was ordered to fight fire with fire and engage in covert operations, paramilitary warfare, to roll the Russians back.
And so over the years, we've seen many depictions in fiction of the activities of, if you like, the spies right throughout Europe during that period. The CIA, though, it was allowed to involve itself in military activity.
Well, it was ordered to engage in military activity by the Secretary of State and by the President of the United States, and to engage in sabotage and subversion and support for underground armies. The actual mission to begin with was espionage, spying. That is the unique function of the CIA. And covert action overtook espionage. And one of the CIA's really most successful directors in the Cold War, Richard Helms, regarded that as a tragic mistake. You know, the British SOE had trained up Americans during World War II, and their mission, of course, to quote Churchill, was to set Europe ablaze.
Now, the activities of the CIA, it extended to different continents as well. I mean, obviously, in Central and South America, they were active. Is there any estimate as to how many governments were subverted by the CIA?
Ha! Dozens. And in the case of Guatemala in 54 and Iran the previous year in 53, democratically elected leaders were overthrown in favor of right-wing autocrats who supported the United States. This did not work out in the long run in Iran, as you may have noticed.
Yeah, I was recently listening to a podcast about the overthrowing of the Iranian regime back in the 50s. The Brits and the Americans together replaced, they stopped a Democrat really from getting into power and made sure the Shah held sway. And of course, we know where all that ended up with the famous Ayatollah arriving back from Paris.
Not well is how it ended up.
Not well. Did presidents always find themselves four square behind the agency?
I would say that during the Cold War and its immediate aftermath in the 90s, presidents either came to office, believed the CIA was a magic bullet with crystal balls to see the future, and wound up disbelieving and disdaining the CIA, or they came into office disdaining and disbelieving the CIA and gradually became convinced it could do things for them.
Hmm. Now, we know John F. Kennedy, with the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba, he became disillusioned with the kind of info that the CIA had given him.
Well, I mean, the Bay of Pigs invasion, where the CIA went to try and overthrow Fidel Castro in 61, Bay of Pigs is a synonym for disastrous failure. After that, Kennedy, very young president, unschooled in such things, wanted to break the CIA up and scatter it to the four winds. But instead, he put his 35-year-old brother, Bobby Kennedy, the attorney general, in charge of covert action and paramilitary warfare. And, the CIA gets it in the neck for trying to assassinate Fidel Castro, trying and failing half a dozen times. Well, it wasn't the CIA's idea to do that. It wasn't as if a bunch of CIA officers were having martinis one night. One of them said, "Hey, I've got a good idea. Let's go kill Fidel Castro." It was John F. Kennedy and his brother Bobby who wanted that done.
And I presume the CIA came up with the idea of the exploding cigar, which was maybe never deployed.
Yeah, there were a lot of mad scientists working for the CIA back in the day.
Now, I suppose the focus of your book is the CIA in the 21st century. And, of course, the big event in the 21st century, which began the century, really, is 9/11. And this can be marked down as a total failure by the CIA to do what it is supposed to be doing, which is warning of the Pearl Harbor and of this century. The Twin Towers attack on 9/11 was the Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I beg to differ there, Pat. The failure was a systemic failure of the entire government of the United States. It was a failure of the president, George W. Bush, to heed the warnings that the CIA had given him 36 times that something terrible was going to happen with Al-Qaeda. It was a failure of the FBI. It was a failure of the Federal Aviation Administration, which never bolstered the cockpit doors. It was a failure of the immigration services, of the State Department. It was a systemic failure of the government, but of course the CIA got it in the neck.
Now, George Tenet, who was the CIA director at the time, he did try to warn George Bush over Osama bin Laden because they were aware of the attacks that had been mounted by Al-Qaeda in East Africa, two synchronous attacks almost, and if they can do that kind of thing, they can do much more. But Bush didn't listen.
Yeah, it's not enough for the CIA to ring the alarm. The president has to hear it. Bush wasn't listening.
And all those around him, I mean, Condoleezza Rice didn't pay any attention either. And then when finally it happened and they learned that Al-Qaeda was involved, and this I find fascinating, they somehow together, Rumsfeld, Bush and Condoleezza Rice, down in the Situation Room or wherever they bunkered down, they came to the conclusion, or they asked themselves the question, could Iraq be involved, Saddam Hussein? And they came to the answer, yes.
The decision to go after Saddam Hussein and knock off Iraq was taken 6 days after 9/11. That's correct.
So the intelligence...
And, can I just say, yeah? Pat, doing that was as if after the Japanese attacked the United States at Pearl Harbor, the United States turned around and invaded Ireland.
Yeah, as illogical as that. But then all of those pesky Middle East countries, sure, they're all the same.
Well, you know, I want to make this point. Ideology is the enemy of intelligence. If you are an ideologue, your mind is made up. And the facts, including secret intelligence, they won't change your mind. The Bushies were ideologues, and they believed if they knocked off Saddam Hussein, the earth would smell of roses forevermore. All the Middle East nations would become democracies. The Israelis and the Palestinians would make peace. And, you know, democracy at gunpoint, at an American gunpoint, would prevail everywhere, from the Mediterranean to the Indian Ocean.
Now, I remember, and you were probably there, but at the United Nations General Assembly, when Colin Powell made his presentation, complete with graphics and big video screen and all the rest, showing the weapons of mass destruction, or alleging they were present in Iraq. And I was watching it from here, and I'm looking at this saying, they have nothing. There's nothing there. Absolutely nothing. He's telling us nothing. These are simply contentions. They are not facts. And everyone lapped it up.
And sitting right over his shoulder was George Tenet, the director of the CIA. You were not the only person to reach that conclusion.
But was Colin Powell aware that he was peddling bullshit, basically?
He became aware in the months that followed when George Tenet and the CIA went back to him and said, General Powell, that thing we told you about biological weapons, that ain't right. And so the CIA's sandcastles of conjecture lapped by the ocean gradually crumbled. And Colin Powell was, you know, the most popular general of his generation. He could have been elected president had he wanted. He was a great guy. And he said before he died a few years ago that the first paragraph of his obituary would be that terrible day in the United Nations, and he was right.
Now, what followed then, besides the invasion of Iraq and the disaster that it became, and by the way, I also believe that at the time, if they had done the right thing by the Iraqi people, in other words, make sure their medical service improves dramatically, make sure they have electricity every day, make sure they are fed, they would have followed the American flag. But instead, they decided to protect the oil ministry. They allowed the museums to be looted. They installed puppets who really had no right to be there. They did all the wrong things. Had they done the right things in governance terms, it might not have been as bad.
Self-delusion is a hell of a drug, Pat.
Do you think I'm deluded on that one?
No, man. I'm talking about the American Imperium in Iraq.
What followed, though, Tim, was the question of extraordinary rendition. We had Guantanamo Bay. We had torture, waterboarding. People died under torture at the hands of the United States. Was all of that or any of that legal?
No, it violated the laws of God and man and the Geneva Conventions. But the President of the United States told the CIA that it was legal, and he ordered them to do that. You know, again, the CIA gets it in the neck, but it was the President with that blood on his hands. It was the President who authorized the secret prisons, the President who authorized torture. Back in the old days in the Cold War, there was this notion called plausible deniability, where the president would order the CIA to overthrow a government or attempt to assassinate a foreign leader, but the president's fingerprints would not be on it, right? Plausible deniability. always a joke, a sick, terrible joke. And in the mission, Pat, I really want people to understand that, and the mission makes this point time and again, the CIA is an executor of American foreign policy, and the president makes the policy.
Now, I want to fast forward because the book is an enormous book and it's a fascinating book. And you go through chapter and verse with, you know, real accounts of people, not anonymous people, but people who are prepared to allow their names to be used. But going forward to the present day and the new director of the CIA and what he allowed Doge to do to the rank and file of the CIA. In fact, there is a schism, I suppose, between the director and many of the people who work for the CIA, and, you know, getting rid of people of diversity. So you posit the notion that you're sending someone into Central America who's a white Teutonic male and expecting that person to be an effective spy.
Yeah, or China or Sudan or Pakistan. Yeah. In the name of Trump's ideology, the new director of CIA eliminated diversity in hiring, a long-standing 40-year-old policy, you know, on the very good established the diversity in hiring policy, established with the very good idea that sending an all-white cadre into nations that are Asian or African was probably terrible tradecraft. Diversity was the CIA's superpower. It's how they don't get caught.
Also, in terms of the people appointed, you quote the founding father Alexander Hamilton believed that no right-minded president would nominate people who had no other merit than being in some way or other personally allied to that president.
Yes, and the great moral philosopher Hannah Arendt, in her classic book on the origins of totalitarianism, noted that totalitarianism in power depends on the appointment of crackpots and fools to positions of high power whose only virtue is their loyalty to the president. This is a very dangerous state of affairs, Pat. You've got MAGA warriors in charge of the CIA. You've got the white Christian nationalist and former Fox News host Pete Hegseth running the Pentagon. He has no idea what he's doing. Total amateur. You've got a conspiracy theorist, Tulsi Gabbard, running the Directorate of National Intelligence. And you've got another crackpot, excuse me, Kash Patel, running the FBI. Having these amateurs and toadies in charge of American national security is a very dangerous state of affairs, Pat. It increases the chances of a third Pearl Harbor. And can you imagine what Donald Trump would do if the United States were attacked again at home or abroad?
Well, I presume that his dictatorial instincts would get free rein.
You, sir, are correct. It is not beyond the realm of imagination to think that if the United States were attacked again, he would recreate the secret prisons, declare martial law, cancel elections. A failure in this political climate in the United States, where our democracy is devolving into an autocracy, it would be the end of the noble American experiment with democracy.
Finally, I suppose the fear is, we know that President Donald Trump does not like to get the bad news. So those around him, if they have bad news to bring, may not relay it honestly and in a useful way to him to ensure he makes the right decision.
He has appointed this new director of CIA on the sound principle that he will tell the president only what Trump wants to hear. And that, too, is a dangerous thing.
Well, the book, it's a terrific read. It's also scholarly in its detail. It's called The Mission, subtitled The CIA in the 21st Century, published by William Collins, and its author, Tim Weiner. Tim, thank you very much for joining us on